Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in. It is Thursday morning, January 2nd, 2025. Happy New Year. I am in Studio B alongside Mike Elam, who is filling in for Chris Ranji. Mike, I filled him in that Ranji likes to go to Chicago to visit his family, the wife and kids, where he lives in a brownstone and is a Republican mega donor. So that's where Chris Ranji is right now. So Mike Elam is generously agreed to sit into Studio B with me. Hey, if you are listening on 1120 AM, you might want to check out the FM signal, 98.7 FM. It's a great sound, especially along the 40 corridor. Even better is the Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go, whether you're working out at the gym, working outside in the yard, you're on a boat, maybe. Maybe you're at the Lake of the Ozarks. You can listen to us there on the Odyssey app. We'd love to hear from you, and there's a really cool feature. On the Odyssey app, on the KMOX page, right in the middle is a little microphone icon. You can leave us a voice message. I like to think that it is solely the Chris and Amy Show voice message feature. It doesn't necessarily say that, but I like to think that it's ours. We would love to hear from you. You can also call or text 314-436-7900.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Yeah, just an awful terror attack in New Orleans, killing at least 15 people. The suspect was killed in a shootout with police. He has been identified. Hours later, there was a Cybertruck explosion in front of the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. In just a minute, we will be talking with Anna Schechter. She's the CBS Crime Beat leader for CBS News. Also locally, Gabe Gore is now St. Louis City's circuit attorney after being sworn in yesterday. Meanwhile, there's still a battle going on in St. Louis County for the county prosecutor, as both Governor Parson and Sam Page have made their nominations for who should be county prosecutor. I believe that decision continues today as Wesley Bell officially steps down. And the Blues, well, they beat the Chicago Blackhawks 6-2 in the Winter Classic at Wrigley Field on New Year's Eve. They are now the only team in the NHL to be 3-0 in Winter Classics. There are a couple of 2-0 teams, but the Blues, good on them, 3-0 in the Winter Classic. All right, just getting now to Anna Schechter. Here's what we know. Two deadly incidents rattled the country yesterday. As I mentioned, at least 15 people were killed and dozens were injured when a pickup truck plowed into a crowd on Bourbon Street just after 3 a.m. in New Orleans. And the FBI is calling it an act of terrorism. They've identified the suspect as 42-year-old Texas man and Army veteran. He was killed in a firefight with officers. There was an ISIS flag in his vehicle. And we've also found now that the suspect made videos before the attack in which he said he joined ISIS. Now, hours later in Las Vegas, there was a deadly explosion of a Tesla Cybertruck outside the Trump International Hotel. The driver was killed. Seven others were injured. Officials are still investigating whether it, too, was an act of terrorism. And they're also investigating whether or not there's a possible connection between the two incidents. And so now we bring in Anna Schechter, who's covering crime and public safety for CBS News. Anna, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Happy to be here.
So right now, with the two attacks, is there any belief that these attacks are related in any way?
Well, there are some interesting coincidences, but nothing definitive that connects them. The two things that overlap are that both men, the attacker in New Orleans and the renter of the Cybertruck that exploded in Las Vegas, both used the same app, the Turo app, to rent their respective vehicles. That's one, but Turo is a popular app, so it's possible that that's a coincidence. It's possible it's not. Separately, they both overlapped in Afghanistan, serving tours overseas in the military. The renter of the Las Vegas vehicle was actually stationed in Germany and was on leave for a few days over the New Year holiday to visit his family. And the New Orleans attacker, separately, he had a long career in the military working in IT. He had a steady job at Deloitte, a consultant firm, making a good salary, according to records from his recent divorce in 2022. So this was a professional person, but nevertheless had money troubles, had reported that he was tens of thousands of dollars in debt. So we're putting together profiles of both men. The largest indicator of a connection to terrorism, of course, on the New Orleans side, is the ISIS flag that was attached to the back of the truck. So investigators homed in on that immediately and, of course, are interviewing everyone that he might have known, his community in Houston, family, any associates. So that is underway. Their working theory is that he was somehow radicalized in recent years. Still, so many questions remain. And like I said before, we don't have a definitive link between the two incidents.
And it's Mike. Thanks for joining us this morning. Is there any link that anybody's talked about? I just found it strange that both of them were using electric vehicles. And I thought, of all the vehicles that are out there, what are the odds that they're both going to use these electric vehicles?
It's a great question. An electric truck is relatively unusual. And so we are asking the same questions and trying to get answers. Was this somehow coordinated? And were both men trying to rent electric vehicles to make a point? Lots of questions, not a lot of answers right now, but we are certainly pursuing these lines. We're being very careful because we don't want to speculate that there was a correlation or a joint planning before we actually know that that's the case.
Going to New Orleans, we know this 42-year-old man, he rammed the truck into the crowd. But is it that authorities are still looking for more suspects? They believe he did not act alone. More explosive devices were found and then taken care of by authorities later on that morning in New Orleans. Where are we with those other suspects and how many people they might be looking for?
Well, that's a great question, because our sources were telling us that there was a video that investigators were reviewing that showed between 3 and 5 people that they thought might be dragging explosive devices or parts of explosive devices, and they assumed that these were potential accomplices. That was a dead end for investigators, and they now have cleared those individuals. So while they were very certain in their statements, even this morning, that there were accomplices, other people working with the attacker in New Orleans, they don't have anyone specific. They don't have any suspects. Now, the current head of the police, this police superintendent in New Orleans, said this morning publicly that there were persons of interest. But the FBI is identifying those people, talking to them. So far, according to what we have been told, no one has been elevated from, a person of interest to a suspected accomplice at this time. So it's unclear. And there's so many fast moving parts. It was in the early hours that they were initially really talking a lot about accomplices. Now they're planning to have a football game this afternoon at 4 p.m., and they still don't know where the accomplices are. Mm-hmm. It is not yet definitive that there are specific people that helped him carry out this attack in New Orleans specifically.
as we start to learn more about who these two people are, we're hearing an awful lot about the personal life of the New Orleans attacker. Just went through a recent divorce, has three kids, lost his job, was basically living in a mobile trailer. His life really looked like it had made a bad turn, and the parents, evidently, his ex-wife and her husband had asked that he be removed from the children. I haven't heard that type of background story so far on the Vegas attacker. Do we know anything more about his personal life?
Well, we do. We know that he was married and had an 8-month-old daughter, according to his family. We've spoken to his father. They had a call on Christmas. He was acting normally by all accounts to those that he was interacting with around the holidays. He was, as I said, home on leave for the holidays. The people we've talked to say there was absolutely no indication of any erratic behavior.
And are they currently investigating his online presence, social media presence, to see if there were any signs of radicalization, any signs of a connection to a terrorist organization like ISIS?
Well, the FBI is working with local law enforcement in Las Vegas, and certainly they had to identify that, you know, the person who rented this vehicle, they're still pinning down, is that the DNA of the person found in the car. They believe it to be, but they have not definitively pinned that down. They probably will have that any minute now because DNA samples were sent to a crime lab for testing. We know that his home in Colorado Springs, the FBI was there. They had to seek a warrant. Some of that takes a little bit of time, but our understanding is that the FBI have visited that home. And generally, when these investigations play out, computers, electronic devices are obtained and scrubbed by the FBI. And that is a key part of the investigation, to look at social media, online activity, looking for any signs of radicalization or any kind of extremist groups. Those are big questions that investigators will be asking.
And I know we got to let you go, and still so many questions, but I know people's minds are going towards Washington, D.C., the inauguration taking place in a couple of weeks here. Just some high profile events. Former President Jimmy Carter lying in state. What kind of security measures are being taken right now in the nation's capital?
Even before these two incidents, this attack and then the explosion in Vegas, we were in a heightened threat environment. Just over the summer, there was an assassination attempt on former President Trump's life at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. Even before that, you had nation state threats from Iran and elsewhere. So we've been in a heightened threat environment. We are now in an even higher threat environment, unfortunately. And so you have security officials, they are on high alert, and they are doing what they're doing. They are ramping up. They were already ramped up. There are only so many people that you can add, but as many as they can, they certainly are. For all of these very high profile events, I think as President Carter lying in state, we have a big event on Saturday for that. And then really looking ahead to the inauguration on January 20th, that is a big day, you know, especially just 4 years ago, look at what happened at the Capitol. So they're going to be on high alert for multiple reasons, trying to guard against multiple potential threats.
Anna Schechter, leader of the CBS Crime Beat on CBS News. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Of course.
Amy Markscores, Mike Elam with you. This is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Good morning. I first want to start off by reminding the citizens of Louisiana that as you travel around the state, you will see the flags of all state buildings at half-mast in honor of those lives that were lost in this horrific act of violence. I also think that it's important to remember that what happened yesterday was akin to those who are old enough to remember jigsaw puzzles, and that you would take a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and you empty the box, and you've got to start sifting through those pieces, and you want to start, if you're real good, you start at the corners, right? Try to put your corners together. And from yesterday to today, over 1,000 law enforcement agents and officers, men and women, have been pouring over countless amounts of data, of videos, of surveillances, interviews, tracking down every possible lead that came to us, whether it was the New Orleans Police Department, the Louisiana State Police, the FBI, or our other federal agencies. Also yesterday, I issued an emergency declaration. That declaration was meant to streamline resources and communications between state, local, and federal partners. And we're seeing the results of it. I also would like to remind everyone that what's going on in this city and this state is twofold. We've got an active criminal investigation going on, while we're also continuing to secure the city in preparation for 3 o'clock kickoff time for the Sugar Bowl. With that, I would also remind those who are in the city that as far as state resources are concerned, we have the Louisiana State Police, the Louisiana National Guard, which was part of that emergency declaration, which allowed us to put an entire MP company on the ground. Those become force multipliers, is what we call that in law enforcement in the military. That helps to add to the resources that we have. Wildlife and Fisheries, the Department of Corrections, DSF, DHS, our Veterans Affairs, our Probation and Parole, all state agencies. Any state agency who has post-certified offices are here in this city to help secure the city. And so with that, I would like to turn it over to Christopher Rea, who is the Deputy Assistant Director of the FBI's Counter Terrorism Division. Chris?
Thank you, Governor Landry. Good morning. I am FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea. I'm from our Counterterrorism Division at headquarters. I'm also joined by Assistant Special Agent in Charge Alethea Duncan from our New Orleans office, who you heard from yesterday. I'm here to discuss not only the latest investigative information we have here in New Orleans, but also let you know about other investigative activities outside of the state. I first, and most importantly, want to send our deepest condolences to the victims of this horrific attack and their loved ones. 14 innocent victims were killed in this senseless attack, and at least 35 are injured. We cannot ease the grief people in this community and across the nation are feeling at this time, but rest assured, we stand with you and in support of you. All the resources, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later, all the resources of the FBI are being focused on tracking down every piece of evidence, every lead, every interview, every potential lead we've got. While I won't be able to answer all your questions today, my goal is to be as forthcoming as possible with you on what we've uncovered so far. First and foremost, let me be very clear about this point. This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act. This was obviously a critical incident, and with that, lots of information and tips come pouring in from law enforcement, first responders, and the public. We have been aggressively running down these tips and information. As you all know, that takes time, and we will continue to do so until every lead has been followed through on. This investigation is only a little more than 24 hours old. So I ask you to keep in mind that as I go through some of the specifics later. But at this point, currently, and this is another position, another fact I want to be clear on, we do not assess at this point that anyone else involved in this attack is involved in this attack except for Shamsuddin Jabbar, the subject you've already been briefed on. A little bit about what the FBI is doing. So we are surging people and assets to the area from across the region and across the nation. Special agents in multiple field offices across the country have been deployed and are assisting with potential aspects of this investigation and following up on every lead. Additional teams of special agents, professional staff, and victim specialists continue to arrive to provide more investigative power and assistance to the victims and their families. We've also forward deployed a number of our critical incident response group assets, including members of our hostage rescue team, special agent bomb technicians, and crisis management coordinators. In addition, we have deployed more evidence response technicians to continue to process the various scenes that we have. So far, we have received just over 400 tips from the public, and that information is being followed up on both here in New Orleans and across the country. Some of the tips are here in New Orleans, and there are other tips in other states across the country that we are following up on. The FBI team and our law enforcement partners here are also reviewing hundreds of hours of surveillance and other video from both the French Quarter and other locations. As for a timeline, at this point, investigators believe Jabbar picked up the rented F-150 in Houston, Texas on December 30th. He then drove from Houston to New Orleans on the evening of the 31st, and he posted several videos to an online platform proclaiming his support for ISIS. There were five videos posted on Jabbar's Facebook account, which are timestamped beginning at 1:29 a.m. and the last at 3:02 a.m. In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer. He also provided a will and testament. FBI and ATF. FBI. We have a couple different scenes at the location. We have released the scene at Bourbon Street. That scene has been released. We also have a scene off of Mandeville address where we're currently searching that scene right now. FBI and ATF agents have secured that house, and that location is being searched for potential evidence. On New Year's morning, Jabbar opened fire after ramming through a blocked-off area of Bourbon Street, used his truck as a weapon to run over the victims. Teams of specially trained victim specialists, again, as I said, are on the ground here in New Orleans, assisting survivors of the attack and loved ones of the deceased. We do not believe the public is in any danger around any of these locations. Three phones linked to Jabbar have been recovered, and digital media exploitation is a priority to see what is on the devices and determine if there are any other potential leads. Additionally, we have recovered two laptops and are currently reviewing them for any potential leads. Those laptops were recovered at the Mandeville address. Evidence technicians will also be going over the F-150 truck Jabbar was driving. As you know, we recovered an ISIS flag from the back of the vehicle. Jabbar declared his support for the terrorist group on social media, as I stated before, as he made his way to New Orleans. FBI bomb technicians also recovered two IEDs in coolers, one from the cross-section of Bourbon and Orleans Street, and the second at an intersection approximately two blocks away. There were multiple reports of other devices. Those reports turned out to be misinformation or not actual functioning devices. Those are the only two devices that we've been able to recover that were functional. Both devices were rendered safe on scene. We did obtain surveillance footage showing Jabbar placing the devices where they were found. Two other items of interest were determined not to be IEDs. A little bit about Jabbar. Jabbar himself was born in the United States and is a U.S. military veteran. We are looking in everything in his life. While we have interviewed many people who know Jabbar, we still need to talk to others. Whether you know Jabbar personally, worked with him, served in the military, or saw him in New Orleans or Texas, we need to talk to you. You may not think you have relevant information, but what you know could tie in to one of our investigative leads. Specifically, we want to talk to anyone who was in the French Quarter on New Year's Eve or early on New Year's Day. That includes people spotted near one of the two IEDs on Bourbon Street. The IED was inside a cooler, and many people stopped and looked at the cooler and then continued on their way. Let's be clear, again, we do not believe at this point these people are involved in this incident in any way. We want to speak to them as witnesses and want to know what they saw and when. I went down to the crime scene last night. It is very hard to put into words what it looked like and how difficult it was to see. Anyone with information can call us at 1-800-CALL-FBI or send digital tips to FBI.gov/Bourbon Street Attack. Early this morning, evidence response teams finished their work at the crime scene. Bourbon Street has been turned over to the city of New Orleans. As you know, there's also an FBI investigation in Las Vegas. We are following up on all potential leads and not ruling everything out. However, at this point, there is no definitive link between the attack here in New Orleans and the one in Las Vegas. And again, I'll preface everything with what I started with in the beginning, which was, this is very early in an investigation like this. Again, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims of this tragedy and everyone impacted across the country. They remain at the heart of our investigation. I also, although I've only been on the ground here a short time, I also want to express a sincere appreciation for our partners here, which include the U.S. Attorney's Office, HSI, ATF, the New Orleans PD, the Louisiana State Police, the Governor's Office, and countless others. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to the special agent in charge of ATF here, Josh Jackson.
Hey, good afternoon. As stated, my name is Joshua Jackson. I am the special agent in charge for the ATF New Orleans Field Division. And ATF's primary mission is preventing, reducing, and solving violent crime throughout the United States and abroad. Solving part is the focus of this investigation. ATF resources that have been brought to bear to the city and to focus with our federal, state, and local partners have been our national response team. We spoke about the scene that's still being processed now. The national response team of ATF is a team of certified fire investigators, certified explosive specialists, fire engineers, electrical engineers. These folks will give us additional investigative leads to help the investigative team identify what happened at the location in Mandeville and identify how that fire started and move the investigation forward from there. Additional resources that ATF has brought to bear into the city as our ATF special response team. This is a tactical team capable of handling any sort of enforcement operation. This team is deployed on set and ready for the Sugar Bowl today. This team is also made available to the Louisiana State Police and also New Orleans Police Department to assist with any efforts that they may have during this period. Additional resources, as the governor alluded to, he executed executive powers and had an emergency declared to where ATF was able to tap in to emergency support function 13 resources. This allowed us to bring additional explosive detection canines so that we can safely sweep the city and safely sweep the Super Bowl in preparation for the game today. These resources will still be in the city as we lead up to the Super Bowl and through Mardi Gras. These type of ATF resources will be here. The last resources ATF has brought to bear, and probably the most important one, is our victim witness coordinators. These folks come in and they provide resources to the victims and the family members that have suffered greatly during this tragedy. The entire city hurts, but the victims and the family members are in need of resources and care long after this investigation wraps up. This time next year, it'll be hard for the families and friends who suffered during this event. So our victim witness coordinators are working with the FBI, the City of New Orleans coordinators to provide resources to these folks out here. And as we move forward, ATF will be committed. We will work with the investigative team moving this investigation forward, but also we'll be here to make sure the city is safe and prepared as we move into the Super Bowl. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our mayor of this great city, New Orleans. Madam Mayor.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, good morning once again.
You were listening to the FBI press conference in New Orleans. We heard from a few people, starting with the governor of New Orleans, or excuse me, the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry. We then heard from the FBI deputy assistant in counterterrorism, and then the special agent in charge of the ATF, going through what we know regarding this attack in New Orleans that happened on Bourbon Street. A couple of I guess maybe clarifications, Mike. They did mention the death toll at 14.
Which is down from the original 15.
And I'm not sure if that's because in the original 15 that counted the attacker. If that was like the total of 15, I'm not sure why. But they did say the number, the death toll is 14, dozens injured. Also, there were reports that seemed pretty certain coming out yesterday and even as early as this morning, Ann Schechter mentioned this, that it seemed that there were other people involved. Multiple times, the FBI said, we believe he did not act alone. However, those other reports of multiple devices across New Orleans, across the French Quarter, there were two devices only. There weren't four, there weren't six. There were only two devices that were functional that the FBI was able to take care of, render them non-functional. And the videos show that those two devices were placed there by Jabbar, the guy who drove the truck and started shooting at law enforcement officials. So that is a huge development in going from there might be four people out there we're looking for, too. They do believe it was just Jabbar.
It kind of makes you wonder at this point, because we heard that he was an IT specialist and an HR specialist. What they didn't talk about is, does he have any expertise in doing IEDs? Like, mm-hmm. We haven't heard anything about that. Obviously, he's former military, but we're not quite sure what his training was in the military other than IT and HR. I don't know a lot of HR directors that are putting together bombs at home, but I don't know a lot of HR directors, to be honest with you. So, we'll see what that works out. So I think we're learning from all of this is that it's a situation that's highly in flux. And the more that they continue to look at this, the more you're going to start seeing the rumors fall. The truth will kind of weed it out and you'll get some clarity there. But we're having a pretty widespread focus that we had. I mean, now we know that the truck came from Houston, mm-hmm. is where he picked it up. There was that original report, because it is a rental. The truck had been across the Mexican border. It came across Eagle Pass and ended up in Houston. But they didn't know, was he in that truck then, or did he pick it up later? So now we know he picked it up in Houston. Whoever took it across the border was a different renter, it sounds like. So we don't know all the connections back from Houston. We don't know how much pre-planning was there. They didn't really talk about the video messages that he had left.
Yes, and he had posted five videos in support of ISIS on the drive from Houston to New Orleans. And just for clarification, because the whole rental car thing is confusing, how he picked it up in Houston and why did it go through Eagle Pass? If you're not familiar with Turo, the car rental app, it's like part of the gig economy is I could rent out my car. I could rent out my car to anybody. It's where you can quite literally rent out your own car. If you have an extra car, I have a friend who does that because he's got an extra old car. It's nice, but instead of selling it, he thought, well, I'll use it as a rental car. People have used Turo, but because it is an app where just regular people can rent out their cars, there might be less tracking maybe than if it were like an Enterprise
right.
or a Hertz rental car where you're like, how do you not know? How did Enterprise not know where they're? Well, it's not a big rental car company. It's just an app. It's a car rental app.
And that makes a lot of sense. And I think what we got from this press conference, it feels like they're really trying to focus on what's going on right now and are there other threats that we need to be worried about? I mean, that was interesting. And we were talking about this in the studio while this was going on. You have the Sugar Bowl, as Jeff Landry talks about, the Sugar Bowl going on this afternoon at 3. And then you have the Super Bowl that's coming up later on this month. And then you've got Mardi Gras that's going on.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, three huge events. So obviously the FBI is going to be hyper-focused on, are there other threats that we need to be aware of? And it sounds like they have really kind of ruled out a lot of that. So people have a fairly decent peace of mind. I mean, the governor had said, I am going to be at the game today at 3 o'clock. So trying to instill a sense of safety and comfort level for the people who will be attending the Sugar Bowl today.
Yeah. And I do wonder if it's partly because the FBI has clarified and seemed to have strongly determined that there are not other suspects in that area who took place. Because I will say, going into this morning, Mike, I was a little shocked. Like, if they are still looking for four suspects,
right?
How in the world can you go through with a football game? But it looks like they were already in the process of confirming.
Right.
No, the other reports of multiple devices, there were only two. Both were placed by Jabbar. The FBI was able to take care of those, render them non-functional. And the FBI, interesting too, looking for anybody who was in the French Quarter on Bourbon Street at that time. Really interesting that one of the IEDs was in a cooler and that people walked by and looked at it. I mean, how many people are going to remember anything about New Year's Eve night in the French Quarter?
Well,
I mean,
especially
like,
2 o'clock in the morning in the French Quarter.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I imagine that it is, you know, you're just putting out feelers. Hopefully anybody can have some information. But I could see myself in that situation. Well, first of all, I couldn't really see myself. I'm a prude. I don't go out and get drunk. But but if I were in that situation, just the chaos of the revelry, if you saw a cooler, I wouldn't think twice of it.
Well, and it makes you wonder, what did that IED look like?
Right.
I mean, was it something that would catch your eye? Was it something that would blend right in? You know, was it disguised? You don't know right now. So it's easy to armchair quarterback a lot of things, right? But I think right now, people should feel good about the fact that it seems like this is somebody who worked alone, or at least in the New Orleans part. If he did had help, then it was going to be help earlier. It was done before he got to New Orleans. So we've got a game coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So folks who, if you have loved ones that are down maybe for the game, you should have a good sense of comfort that the FBI seems to have a good handle on what's going on.
Yeah, and then the two scenes, crime scenes that the FBI deputy assistant mentioned, you know, those are all surrounded. They recovered three phones, two laptops, all, again, connected to Jabbar. He's Mike Elam. I'm Amy Mark Scores. Did You See This is next on The Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Well, it goes without saying, Mike, that you and I... Well, I hate to speak for you.
Oh, go ahead. Why not?
Don't you feel old sometimes?
Sometimes?
Like young at heart, but old sometimes.
Oh, lately I feel very old all the time.
All the time. Okay. And I'm, you know, over 40 now.
Jeez, that must be bad for you.
I'm on the back nine.
I feel so bad for you.
Well, I have great news.
Yay!
That guy over there.
Yes?
Looks like he can't drive. Maybe he's in fourth grade.
He is aging well.
You are You are old too, because guess what? Forget about Gen Z. Forget about Gen Alpha. You know, the kids that are 10 years old. Gen Beta.
That's it.
Started yesterday. Gen Beta, which a lot of people have said sounds like a practice generation.
It really does, doesn't it?
It does. So Gen Beta, everyone born from yesterday to, I think, 2035 will be considered Gen Beta.
They're all test episodes.
And they are test episodes. And get this. A lot of the people born in Gen Beta will live to see the 22nd century.
Wow.
That's weird, right?
So years ago, when I had just turned 40, so it wasn't yesterday.
Uh-huh. It was like 4 years ago.
Yeah. So math is not your strong suit. So this guy was talking about the fact, and this was probably, I was at Hubbard back then, so it would have been maybe 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, 15 years ago, he said, if you're in this generation right now, you should plan to living over 120 years. You just have to come to terms that by the time you get to 120, you will be more mechanical than you are human.
Like Darth Vader?
We are so good at making replacement parts now in the medical industry that you get new hips, new knees. We're all kind of used to that. But you get new corneas. You can get new hearts, new lungs. All this stuff can be replaced, it turns out. And we'll see if this beta generation, they'll get to try out a whole lot more.
They probably will. I don't know. It kind of makes me tired. I'm tired.
Hey, to me, it's not about...
I'm 40 and I'm tired.
It's not about quantity. It's about quality.
That's right.
Right? As long as I have good quality, I'm good. I mean, Jimmy Carter just left us at 100. But you got to see, I mean, that at the end, when they were wheeling Jimmy out, Jimmy.
I feel like they shouldn't have shown him on TV.
I know.
Don't show me on TV when I'm like that. I feel bad. Hey, he's Mike Elam. I'm Amy. Mark Scores over there is the youngster, Matt Pajeski. Former youngster, yeah. When we come back, we've got some thoughts on New Year's Eve celebrations. And, of course, Bernie Miklas joins us. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.